This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, my guest today is one of the greatest players we've ever produced in Ireland, North or South, and also one of the greatest players ever to play for Liverpool. Ronnie Whelan, thanks very much for doing this, Ronnie.
Not a problem, Eamon.
You're a home farm boy, and normally I don't like people who play for home farm because they were all posh boys and we were Stella Maris.
Posh from Finglas.
Yeah. You had a fantastic schoolboy career, and unlike most of us, you didn't go away when you were 15. You went away, I think, when you were 17. Mm. Of course, I should say that I saw your dad play, Ronnie, for Pats, in a really good Pats side that I think won the Cup. Was it 57?
I think a medal I have is 61, I think.
61?
Yeah.
Right. And so you came from, you had a great pedigree. Your brother played as well?
Yep. And brother, nephew, lot of Drogheda. My dad played at Drogheda, and my brother played at Drogheda, and Bowes, Rovers. Gavin, my nephew, scored for Drogheda, the winner at the Aviva, which is now the Aviva, in the Cup final a few years back. So yeah, it's a strong football family.
Could you have gone away at 15?
Yeah, Man United. I'd been at Man United from 13, more or less every school holiday at Man United.
Right.
When I was 15, they offered me an apprenticeship. My dad didn't want me to go.
He wanted you to finish your education?
Yeah.
And what were you doing? Were you doing the leaving?
I finished my leaving.
You did?
When I was 17. Then I went on trial to Liverpool. Man United didn't really come back in then after I said no. I still trained with them after that. I didn't sign as an apprentice.
Who's the manager for United in those
Tommy
years?
Dock.
Tommy Dock, yeah.
Yeah. Right. So it was the Stuart Pearson, the Greenhoffs, and Jerry Daly and all that team.
Yeah.
So I used to be training alongside them at the Cliff training ground. So I would have really wanted to go to Manchester United at 15. I pleaded with my dad, and nobody will ever come back in. Mm. And my dad said they will come back in, finish school, and then we'll see where we go.
Yeah, and you played League of Ireland for a while. I mean, I think you made your debut for Home Farm when you were 16?
Yeah, just a week after my 16th.
Yeah, practice. I mean, looking back on that, would that have been a good experience in terms of gaining experience, playing with players who were older than you, more experienced than you?
I thought that was, when I look back on it, I thought it was great because I wasn't going away and playing with 15-year-olds and 16-year-olds. I'm now 16 playing against men, grown men.
Right.
Joe Bourke at Bowes, these people I'm playing against. Heroes of League of Ireland, but I think I learned how to look after myself, and I learned a lot more playing against men than I would have if I had gone away at 16.
Yeah, it's interesting that if you look at the present Irish team, Seamus Coleman played League of Ireland, Wes Hoolahan played League of Ireland as well, and then went away, you know, later.
Yeah.
And there's something to be said for that. If I had a son now who was in that age bracket and was desperate to get away, I'd be inclined to say if you go to one of the big clubs, if they need a player, they're not going to look in the reserves. They tend to buy real quick. I mean, Chelsea have a lot of players like that. Manchester United the same. There's something to be said, isn't there?
Yeah.
For gaining the experience in the League of Ireland.
Yes, but I think it was Quinny. I was talking to Quinny recently, and he'd been speaking to somebody from an academy in Man City or Arsenal or whatever. They want the kids there at 12, 13 years of age to teach them from that age. They feel that they lose an awful lot if they don't go away at 12, 13. I could have never gone away at 12 or 13.
No.
But they're looking at kids this young now to take them away, to get them into the system that they want to do.
Yeah, there's a nine-year-old Irish lad at Barcelona, I believe. And the whole family go. It's
not too bad, is it, if your mum and dad and all that come away with you and they get your dad in, or your mum in a job, and you've got your
family.
That's
what Messi did, for example, in Barcelona. It took the whole family. But it's a big punt because there's a long way from being a prodigious kid to being a real player.
I've seen so many, Eamon, go through Liverpool when I was there as an apprentice, and he's going to be a great player, and he's going to be a great player, and then they don't get a pro contract, and you never hear them again after that.
Now, Bob Paisley was the manager when you went there, and they had just been through a glorious phase, hadn't they?
I went in 79.
Who were the great players there?
It was the team of Clements, Phil Neal, Phil Thompson, Alan Hansen,
Mark Lawrenson.
No, Loro's own came with me.
Right.
Loro was like 80, 81, I think, when Loro came along. But it was Ray Kennedy, Jimmy Case, Souness, Terry Mack, Doug Leash, David Johnson.
Yeah.
Then we started pushing through in 80, 81.
Rush was in that team?
Myself and Rushy were then pushing through with Loro and Steve Nicol and Craig Johnson and them. Bob once said that winning the league in 81 was one of his biggest achievements, because he had to break up a team who'd won the European Cup in 79 and 81.
Yes.
Now he was getting rid of Ray Kennedy, Ray Clements, all these players, and then having to bring in a load of young fellas. And we were 12th in the league at Christmas with all these young kids coming in.
Right.
And then luckily we went on and won the league. And Bob thinks that was one of his greatest achievements, to change a whole winning team and then win a league again after that.
Now, Bob Paisley is one of the great...
I don't know why. Honestly,
well, this is what I'm going to ask you. But we know what he won. Three European Cups?
Yeah.
And how many leagues?
God, I don't know how many leagues. I know he won three European Cups.
Right. Now, he took over. There was a transition. He was Bill Shankly's assistant. And there was this whole myth or cult of the boot room and the wisdom that came out of it and all of that. Yeah. Now, an awful lot of stuff might be hyped. But as you witnessed it, What was he like personally? Was he gruff? He always looked gruff.
It could be. It could be funny at times. He loved horse racing as well.
Yeah.
You know, you'd be waiting for him to come in the dressing room.
Always a good sign in a person, right?
You'd be waiting for him to come in the dressing room before the game to give you a team talk, and it'd be like 20-3, and you're thinking, where's Bob? But he's watching the half two. Yeah. So he had to come in then and give his team meet. But Eamon, honestly, you couldn't understand him half the time because he spoke in yet and that and him and wing and
Where's he going from?
What are you on about? He was a Geordie.
A Geordie, right. Yeah. And had he played?
Oh, yes, he played. He missed the cup final for Liverpool in 60-something. Don't know what year. Yeah. Because I think he was dropped for the cup final.
Right.
But he was very, very clever. He knew how to build teams, which I think great managers do. Ferguson done it. Kenny did it a fair bit with Liverpool as well.
Yeah.
They build teams. All the fellas move out, they move someone in, and they get started as good, if not better.
That was the great thing about Liverpool. They made successful transitions. And United had tried after Busby and failed in their transition period. They had Ron Atkinson, they had...
wasn't it?
Well, they had Tommy Dock, Wilf McGuinness, Frank O'Farrell.
Yeah.
And Dave Sexton. So they had five managers before they got to Ferguson. Mm. And Liverpool at that stage were transitioning successfully.
Yeah, Bob, they say, didn't want the job.
Really?
He was comfortable enough where he was coaching. I think that goes down the line as well to Joe Fagan. Ronnie Moran never wanted it. They didn't really want to be the main man. But they took the job, and they all say they learned off Shankly. Mm. You hear so many things that this phrase is Shankly has come out where, I don't want people, I'd rather, if he's not trying, I'd rather he be in jail, you know, this sort of things. You have to get people who are going to play for Liverpool. That was the thing. But Bob Paisley takes someone like Ray Kennedy, won a double with Arsenal, centre forward with John Radford,
right,
and he brings him to Liverpool and plays him left side of midfield, and he's absolutely magnificent. He sees things, or he saw things in players.
This is knowledge.
I played left midfield.
I know. I
came as a sort of what you call an inside forward at the time, but Bob put me on the left, and I got in ahead of Sheeds in the end, Kevin Sheedy, which everybody thought there was no chance of, because Sheeds was a naturally left footed left side. Bob Paisley saw something that I could do the job there. So, he's seeing things.
Yeah, well, that's the greatness of him. I mean, all the talk now is of tactics, an awful lot of it. But really, the players are so much...
I mean, you know what it's like. If you've got a good players with a good mentality, yeah, you don't really have to tell them an awful lot. Mm. You know, go out. Well, honestly, it really was most of the time, go out and enjoy it.
And, yeah, the team, how... You got in the side, then you were out for a while, then you got back as a regular. How long did that process take?
I got in, it was 8-1 I played. I played one game that season. Scored against Stoke City at Anfield on my debut. Then I didn't get back in. I was sort of around the first team sub here and there, but not really getting in. And then I come on against Man City at Anfield when we lost 3-1 at Christmas when we were 12th in the league. And then I stayed in the team more or less after that till the end of that
season. Playing the left side of...
Playing left side of midfield, yeah. Ray Kennedy was struggling then.
And when's the what was the first trophy?
League Cup in 82 against Tottenham, sorry.
Yeah, right.
And I was lucky to score two that day at Wembley on my Wembley debut. So my debuts were all right for me.
Yeah.
But we won the League Cup that year and then went on to win the league.
Was Dalglish in that side?
Yeah, there was Dalglish, Souness,
yeah,
Phil Neal.
Yeah, I mean, Lolo. They were great players.
To play with these players, you know, when you go away as a 17, 18 year old and you're thinking, you know, you're shy, you're looking at Dalglish, Souness, I'm never going to get a game here. I said that to my dad. I said, how am I going to get a game? But you stick at it and you learn off them. I thought what's happening at Liverpool now for me is great, that they're going back to having everybody in the one training ground. They had two different training grounds. They had the Kirby and Melwood. And the kids were all at Kirby and the first team would be at Melwood. Now it's all going to be integrated now up in Kirby. Because I think it was great for an apprentice kid or a kid like me coming off a training session and then watching the first team train.
Yes.
You stand there in awe and you would hope and you think, God, I'd love to be there someday.
Yeah.
You don't get that if you've got two separate entities. They want to be together for me.
The other thing that strikes me about those players and that team, that particular team, is people talk now about teams that don't have leaders. Plenty of leaders in that, wasn't a character. No, I mean, Souness, Dalglish, of course.
Phil Thompson.
Thompson, yeah.
Phil Neal. Hansen was a leader.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't shout an awful lot.
No.
But he got annoyed now and again, and, you know, you knew where you stood with him. But then when you talk about Souness, Dalglish, these people, they were...
Yeah.
They were people you go into battle with.
Yes.
And as a young kid, which we had 4 or 5 coming into the team at that time, we were... prepared to go in behind these and do what we thought they're doing is right, so we were going to do that.
And the big rivals at that stage were
the mid 80s was Everton, really.
Everton, yeah.
But you've always got your
Howard Kendall was the manager.
Yeah,
there.
They won the league, didn't they, in 85?
You played Everton in the cup final,
86 and 89.
That I was at. I remember the Liverpool fans, they booed. I think it was the Duke of Gloucester or one of those guys when he came out to be introduced to the players. And I was at I was in the press box and I heard these boos. It was quite funny. I mean, did it strike you when you were on the pitch?
No, not at all.
Okay, maybe you were a secret royalist. Now, one of the terrible things, there were two terrible tragedies while you were playing for Liverpool. The Heysel Stadium in 1985, European Cup final against Juventus, and of course Hillsborough in 1989. The Heysel tragedy, how did it affect the players on the field? You were playing Juventus, you lost the game, Platini scored the winner, I think. How did it affect you? Did you know what was going on?
Yeah, we knew there was casualties. We didn't know how many.
Did you describe when did it start before the game?
Yeah, you could see things were heating up before the game. We went out on the pitch before the game and walked around to where our fans were. And you could see it was an old stadium. You know, even from being a player, you could sense this is just...
not fit to hold
it. Yeah, it was just, and there's a running track, and then it wasn't... I don't know, it wasn't safe for whatever reason. But because our fans were there, we went and sort of to see them. But when we got back in the dressing room and we're changing, and then you hear, things start to filter through.
Yes.
The game's going to be delayed 10 minutes, a little bit of crowd trouble, half an hour, a couple of people hurt. It might be a little bit longer, there's one or two may have died. And then you're sitting there thinking, what's going on? There's people dying. What are we going to do? And then it got so long, it was like, you're hearing more people have died and you're thinking, what's the point?
Yes.
And I think it was FIFA or UEFA, whoever it be, UEFA. Said, we want you to play the game. UEFA, have to get the game on and get it over with.
And these were, for people who wouldn't know, these were Liverpool fans, it seems, that were attacking the Juventus fans.
It's an overflow, they say, from the year before, when we played in Rome.
Oh, when you won?
When we won in Rome. By all accounts, and I wasn't there to see it, but people tell you that when Liverpool fans left the ground, there was no police escorts, there was no real looking after them, and the Roma fans had come out from all sides and basically beat them up.
Yeah, now, I should say that in Rome, you won the European Cup.
We won that one on penalties,
In a penalty shootout. Yeah. You didn't take a penalty, Ronnie.
I didn't. I was hiding somewhere. I was in the piano with the lid down. I wasn't having a go. And I think there was probably me, Loro and Michael Robinson, three Irish. Me and Robbo and Mike. Me, Loro, Robbo.
Yeah.
And I think it was between the three of us who was next. So.
Yeah. And who took it?
No, that was after Alan Kennedy. Yeah, that was after Alan Kennedy.
The feeling of winning, the European Cup.
It's 22, I think it was.
Yeah.
To win a European Cup. Yeah. It was all happening so quick, and I probably was taking things for granted then. You win the League Cup and the league 3 years on the trot, and then you go into a European Cup final at 22 years of age. It's seven trophies in 3 years or something. Yes. It's just remarkable. But you just go along, and you probably become blasé about it. Me and Rushy used to room together, and we'd never say anything like, isn't this great? It was like, this is what we do.
Yeah, and English clubs, Liverpool had won, had dominated, and had been, hugely successful in the European Cup.
I heard of Notts Forest, Villa into Liverpool.
Yeah, Villa won it in, I think it was 92, was it, or something? I'm not sure. But the idea of Aston Villa winning what is now the Champions League is bizarre. To go back to the Heysel, you lost the match 1-0. Do you feel that what happened on the pitch, what happened off the pitch, influenced the game?
Flipping influenced the referee in the last couple of minutes when I was taken down by Bonini, and it was the most definite penalty you'll ever see. But I moaned at the time, but I couldn't be bothered really in the end.
Yeah.
I've seen it on video since I've seen the game, and I don't know why I watched it. I probably watched it just to see was my mind playing tricks on me, but there was a complete and utter penalty that you had to give them.
And that was before the time of diving. There'd be no question of simulation or anything like that.
I seen him coming. I knew I'd just get there before him.
Right.
I just nicked it away, and then he took me out. But who cares? That's been a professional, selfish reason that I wanted to get the penalty and win the European Cup. But after it all said and done, I was just give it to them and let's go home.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Now, around that time, Ireland had a change of team manager. You were playing for, who did you make your debut against?
Czechoslovakia.
Yeah.
I came on for Jerry, I think. Jerry Daly. We won 3-1.
That was at Owen Hands.
Owen.
Coming towards the end of Owen, was it?
That was Owen who gave me that. No, that was we was a little bit before Owen went.
Yeah, Owen went in 86.
Yeah, and that was, God, that was 81, 82, I think. So right. I had 4 or 5 years with Owen.
Okay, and nearly qualified. I came close to qualifying.
Yeah,
and it was different in those days because there was no weak nations.
My full debut was in the game against France when we beat them 3-2.
Right, yeah.
And they went through on goal difference or something, didn't they, in the end of that campaign? That we nearly went through that campaign. But that was the great France team. And me as a 19, 20-year-old playing against Jerez and...
They won the European Championship in 1984.
All these.
Yeah.
They won it, yeah. Great team. But that was the start of my Ireland career.
Now, Jack arrived in 1986.
Yeah.
What was your first impression of him?
I wasn't... it was one of them where you think, what, is this going to work?
I suppose I should set the background, because A, he managed Middlesbrough. Yeah. I played against his Middlesbrough team, which Graham Sinise played in. Before he got to Liverpool, he played for Jack, and they were very well organised, but they banged it forward real quick and got up behind the ball. I was playing for Millwall.
Yeah.
So that was his preferred
philosophy.
Style. And he did the same at Sheffield Wednesday. It didn't work quite so well. Middlesbrough won the championship by 16 points. I mean, they were a really, really good side.
I mean, it was a way of playing football, but as a midfielder, you're not going to be...
No.
This is great. I love this. I'm honest, I didn't like playing that way of football. I wanted to get on the ball, but I don't think Jack had the faith or the...
I mean, how did he put it to people?
This is what we're going to do.
Yeah.
Then we all know what Jack is like now. Yeah. We didn't at the time, but this is he was like that then. He would get it in the corners. He said that this is it.
I mean, this is a team now, and it totally fascinates me because I lived through it as a journalist and as a fan. This is a team with Paul McGrath, Mark Lawrenson, Kevin Moran, Ronnie Whelan,
Liam
Brady,
Ray
Houghton, John Aldridge,
Sheedy,
Kevin Sheedy, a really classy team.
There was plenty of players there, wasn't there?
Yeah, quality. Now, one game in particular I do remember, there was a key game. I think it was against Scotland away. And it was 87, I think, because we went to the Euros. It was in the Euros.
We went to 88, didn't we?
Yeah, and the team was Ronnie Whelan left back,
yep,
which was funny. The two best centre-halves in England, possibly, Mark Lawrenson and Paul McGrath in midfield.
Paul played right back that day.
Did he play right back,
Davy Cooper.
Right. Paul
and then it was Kevin and Mick.
Right back. Kevin and Mick McCarthy, who is at the heart of the defence.
Yep.
Mark Lawrenson scored the winner.
Mark Lawrenson, Chippy.
Liam.
Ray and Sheeds, I think it was, and Frank and Aldo, I think that was the team.
Yeah, and you beat Scotland 1-0, and I just thought it was very funny to see you playing left back.
I played a bit with Liverpool at left back.
Yeah.
When Jim broke his leg.
Yeah.
So I wasn't... I could play there.
Well, you were able to adapt because you had a great football brain, which was... And instincts and the brain and all the sort of, you know... All the things you learn on the street, really.
Yeah.
When they talk about street footballers, just in passing, Ronnie, I mean, the point I would always try to make is that you've acquired all this wisdom and the football nous before you're 15. Like, you know things. How to get out of tight corners.
You'd have a feeling for it, don't you?
Yeah, well, and if you're playing a street game and it's 5 against 5 or 10 against 10, when you haven't got the ball and you have to defend, you learn how to defend, even if you're a ball just player. Isn't that right?
Well, you're doing it on the street and you're just getting back and trying to stop someone from going past you. So you learn how to adjust your body or adapt.
Yeah.
And a lot, you know, you mentioned street football, you've used it a lot. Other people starting to use it now.
Yeah, I was using it for a long time.
For a long time ago.
I just wonder, because if you kind of agree with me, that I don't think anyone can coach you or teach you to do things you do by instinct that you've learned yourself.
Yeah.
Because you were playing in a game without a referee, with coats for goals or lampposts or, you know, some improvised game. Yeah. And you were smaller maybe. Like, adults could play as well. Guys could join in. So you had to work this game out for yourself. And by the time, it didn't mean you didn't improve. You got stronger. You maybe learned little things.
Yeah.
But all the big things. And I wonder, now you're one of our greatest players. How much did you have of the stuff in your mind and your instincts when you were 15? My belief is that you'd have it all, but it just needed to be assembled and put into practice.
You could well be right, but you did. I felt I was ready to go away at 15.
Yeah,
I'd been away and I'd seen what other teams, Man United, had.
Yeah.
And I felt I was as good, if not better, than all their apprentices.
Yeah.
But I'd not learned that at Manchester United. I'd learned that at home. I'd learned that on my own, kicking the ball against the wall for hours.
Yeah.
Now, this 10,000 hours of coaching in some manual to get you to a higher level, you have to be coached properly.
It has to come from inside, though. You have to learn the thing yourself.
Yeah, but you have to be able or to be willing to go out in the street on your own and kick the ball against the curb for an hour and just come back at you any way you feel and be able to control it after that.
And surely, because kids can't do that anymore and don't do it, that's gone.
Yeah. Well, that'd be with the people wonder why we haven't got Ireland and Scotland and these countries haven't got the players they used to have, is because I don't think anybody goes out on the street on their own and boots the ball against the wall for hours and learns how to control it.
No,
and then plays your street games and learn how to get out away from a tackle of an 18-year-old trying to kick a 12-year-old.
Yeah, I mean, who coached Messi? Nobody. He coached himself.
Well, even if they did try and coach him, he did what he does what he does.
Right.
Because he's learned that. He's learned how to go past people.
But I'd say he had that basic skill set. Don't forget, he joined Barcelona when he was 14.
No, he didn't go to Barcelona because he was hopeless. No. He had something already. Exactly. He'd been on the street for so many years, taking people on. And it's like you say, they nurture it then and they bring all your things together to make you
become a
professional footballer.
And then, as you say, you get into a team with Kenny Dalglish and people like that.
My dad said to me before I went away, you know, he said, when you go away, you'll get better because you're playing with better players all the time.
Yeah.
And so it was exactly right. Once you're playing with players who see your movement, you know, playing League of Ireland, I'm not, no disrespect to the lads I played with, but I'm seeing things at 16 and I'm thinking they'll see it.
Yeah.
And they weren't seeing it. But you go away then and you're playing with top players.
Yeah.
So you don't have to think about it. You know they're going to move. You know they know you're going to put it there.
Yeah.
That's what Rushy found as well with Kenny. Kenny said, if I play the ball, I know where you are, so just run.
Right.
So Rushy didn't run, and Kenny played the ball.
Yeah.
And Rushy looked at him, and Kenny screamed at him.
Yeah.
And Rushy said, from then on, I just made the run, and the ball came.
Yeah.
So that's what happens when you play with good players. You make the run, they'll put the ball there for you.
Yeah, I saw Ian Rush play. Jack's first game was against Wales in Lansdowne Road, as it then was. It was a friendly game, and Ian Rush was playing for Wales. And I'd never seen him play live before, but I thought he was one of the greatest players I'd ever seen. He scored a goal on the day, but that wasn't the point. The amount of work that he did off the ball, the positions he took up, I thought he was a stunning player.
He was our first line of defence. Once he made a move, then people reacted to him.
Yeah,
from behind, and we usually won a far up the pitch. They talk about it now, don't they, with all these teams pressing and far up the pitch and all that. But it was just Rushy would go, and then the centre back is now struggling a little bit to find a pass.
Yeah,
and then the people behind all pushed up, and then you win it back higher up, and then
how good a goal scorer was he?
Great,
deadly.
Yeah, but that's why what people talk about.
So much more than
that for me. That people didn't recognise was the work rate you'd done. Can I just go back on that left back position?
Yeah.
Our next game was against Brazil in Dublin.
Yeah.
And Jack come to me before the game, and he said, Chris Shuten's fit again, so I'm going to play him left back. And I'll tell you what, he said, you can be on the bench. This is the way he spoke to me. You can be on the bench, as if I was going to be delighted. Yeah. And then you can come on any position then, and I can get you on.
And I just looked at him. One of the greatest teams in Europe.
I just looked at him and I went, I'll tell you what, I said, listen, I said, I've played everywhere for you. I've played left back, right back, centre midfield, left midfield, right midfield. I've played everywhere you've asked me to play. I said, everyone's fit and now you drop me. I said, you're completely out of order, but it's your decision. And I walked away.
Yeah.
And Mick Bourne come to me at lunchtime and said, Jack wants to see you. I went to see Jack. First time I've ever known him to change his mind.
Really?
He said,
yeah.
Okay. He said, you're playing left back because you've done that.
And you were one of the top players in England at the time.
And I was only getting in left back.
Yeah. It's extraordinary. I mean, the whole thing, I mean...
You could go on forever with the Jack one, because you go to the Russia game if you wanted the performance.
Well, I want to know, let's just take the going to the Euros in 88 and the game against England, which is the first game, and the one everyone remembers. Mm. That experience... I mean, Packy, I thought, saved us on the tape.
Oh, yeah, no. We hung on
after Ray. It was a hanging on job, wasn't it?
Yeah, we really hung on that day. And I've watched
that. What position did he play at that time?
I played centre midfield then, I was all right.
Centre midfield,
right. It was me and Paul, I think, played that day.
Well, Paul never played centre for Jack. He always played in midfield.
He got injured then, didn't he? And then the Russia game, I think Sheeds played. Sheeds played centre midfield against Russia. But I'd won leagues and I'd won the European Cup, but just getting with your country to the European Championship was a great experience of doing it. It was just so big again.
Yeah.
You know, the World Cup come after that and it was bigger again, but the first time to qualify, it was a great experience. It was really, really great experience.
And I was in Hanover, I think it was, the Russia game. Mm. I was there. Because I did the first one. I walked out of RT at the time. I was watching it at home. I'm working for the Sunday Independent. Mm. But I went to the game, and that goal you scored against Russia, which did come off your shin, Ronnie.
A little bit. But I've seen Wayne Rooney score a goal recently. Well, it was two years ago, and I come nearly off his knee. But it's the greatest overhead kick ever seen at Old Trafford.
Was that the game against Manchester City?
I can't remember. It might have been. But I just see it come off much higher up his shin than where mine did. And mine is the shinner now, but his is a great goal.
No, it was a stunning goal, and one of the things that struck me about that match, Ernie, was for whatever reason, and you hopefully you can.
I know what you're going to say.
This was the best football we ever played. There was no long ball stuff. We passed it. We moved. We should have really beaten them.
Oh yeah,
and they were a good side. Why?
No idea.
Did he say anything different?
Nope, never said a thing, and didn't say anything at half time to stop doing what you're doing.
No, because we really played.
Well, it was amazing that night because we I don't know why it happened. Eamon, you ask any of the players, they don't know why it happened. It just seemed something was probably on at the time, and a few of us probably used our heads and thought, well, these are dropping off. So we can't get in behind
them. There's a parallel to that, Ronnie. The Trapattoni game in Paris, when handball. Now, we played amazing football that night. I mean, the goal we scored, it was like... brilliant move involving Damien Duff. Robbie stuck it in the end, but we passed the ball all night. So I suppose these things are just freaky things. I was still friendly with Jack. And after that match, I explained. He said, "Come back to the hotel," because John had introduced me to him. Because I had a fight with him the first day I arrived here, a press conference. But John said, "No, I'm as always." So now. I was his mate. So he said, I went back to the hotel and I was having a drink at the bar, and he said, "Do you want to come in and eat with us? We have a private room." And it was Mick Byrne, Morris Setters, and him. I said, "That wouldn't be a good idea, Jack. The lads don't like me. There's no way." He said, "Fuck 'em," he said. "We're coming in and you're coming in with me." So he dragged me into the room, and the players were just over the other side of the room, and we sat down at a table, and of course immediately Stapleton who didn't like me. McCarthy.
Yeah.
They were the two.
I sort of remember those people getting up and leaving.
Then they got up and left the room. And I said to Jack, I told you, Jack. He fucking me sense. He just was. It was like.
Yeah.
It was like a scene out of a movie.
But he was like that, Jack, wasn't he? It doesn't. Not. He wasn't one that really cared. I think some great managers are like that. They don't care.
Yeah.
Now, if they upset you or whatever, if they're not playing you, it's not. I'm not doing it because I don't like you. I'm doing it because I think it's better for the team.
Yeah. I just finished with Jack because I want to get on to the rest of your life. But in 1990, yeah. Italia 90, you were captain Liverpool to win the league the season before?
Win the cup 89. We lost out in the league to Arsenal.
That's right, yeah. Captain. But you were captain of Liverpool. Yeah. You scored this fantastic goal, League Cup goal, top corner at Wembley. That was three you scored at Wembley?
Yeah.
In finals?
Yeah.
Did you enjoy the Wembley thing?
I loved the Wembley thing, yeah.
Lots of space on the pitch.
Yeah, all that. But it was, like people always said, really draining. The grass was, I don't know, there was something about the pitch that you got cramp and things like that. But it goes back to the childhood of getting up on Saturday morning.
Yes, yeah.
And putting the telly on at 10 o'clock and staying there till 5 o'clock in the afternoon when someone gets the cup. And that was, that all plays in your mind when you're walking through the tunnel and things like that. So there was Wembley I loved.
It was everything that, as a kid.
Yeah, you're going on
that
the bus.
You'd imagine.
The crowd are all along Wembley Way and things like that. So, yeah.
Now, the second tragedy, and by far the worst experience I'm sure you had as a footballer, was Hillsborough in 89. Again, a cup game, cup semi-final, I think.
Semi-final, Forest.
Not Forest. This tragedy has only just been, well, it'll never be resolved for the victims, but at least some justice has been done in recent times.
Yeah.
What do you remember about how that unfolded? Because again, there was a sense of it before the match began, wasn't there?
There was, when we were out there, before the game, kicking, having a kick around before the game, there was a feeling. It looked as if something was going on, but you couldn't put your finger on what it was.
Yes.
Now we did our stuff. Again, we went back into the dressing room and then you start hearing things.
Yes.
Oh, the game was delayed, I think, for a bit, was it? Maybe not.
Yes, it was. It was, yeah.
And then when we kicked off, I think a lot of it was a case of Peter Beardsley hit the crossbar in the first couple of minutes. And I think people had still not got in. Yeah. And because they hit the crossbar and they heard the scream,
yes,
there was a rush then.
Right.
And then 6 minutes past three, wasn't it?
Yeah.
When they called the game off, referee come to me and he said, "Listen, there's problems behind the goal. We have to get yous off the pitch." When we went back into the dressing room, it was like Heysel was sitting there. Be ready, you're going back out. This is all right. It's just trouble. Then you seen Kenny had to go out and speak to the people to sort of push back or wherever. Some lad, when the door opened, some lad run through by the dressing room shouting and screaming. There's people dying out there. You can't go back out. You can't go back out. And then you're sitting there wondering what the hell is going on. You're wondering about your family, where are they? My missus was in the stand, anybody else I know. But you just, you are really left in the dark about it.
Yeah.
There's something, and then later on it was like, there's been fatalities and the game will not go ahead.
I mean, I assume with that said, you've been in Liverpool a long time, and had an affinity with the people. They are great people, as Castle said.
Yeah. They really are like the Dubliners. They like a beer. They have a laugh. They will help you. They'll do anything they can for you.
And you had to go to funerals.
Yes, we went.
I believe Kenny Dalglish went to every funeral.
I'm not 100% sure whether he went.
That's
to
what
every
they
funeral.
Said, you know. Yeah.
I think the club always made sure there was some player, two or three players at every funeral. So every funeral was attended by a player. Me and Jim went to a lad called Ian Whelan.
Jim Beglin, that is, yeah.
Sorry, Jim Beglin, a lad called Ian Whelan, whose nickname was Ronnie. Came from Warrington. Me and Jim went to his funeral. You sometimes feel like an intruder, you know.
Of course,
I'm part of the reason why we're here, but it's not a very good reason why we're here. You went to watch a football match and you, as a kid, haven't come home.
Yes.
And you sort of sit yourself in.
But the
you
bond,
don't make yourself available. Yeah. You just sort of, you're there.
But a bond, I think, was forged between the people of Liverpool and the football club. That would be stronger. Do you agree with that or not?
I think there's always been a huge bond between the supporters and the football club at Liverpool.
Yes.
This has probably brought everyone closer. Yeah, it wouldn't have.
Yes.
It has brought the whole thing closer. But I don't think it was just Hillsborough that brought the fans closer.
You think it was always there?
Yeah.
I mean, Liverpool is. I follow Liverpool. I'm a Liverpool fan. Always was. But, I mean, would it be fair to say that there's the distinction between, say, Manchester United and Liverpool? Manchester United is made for corporate hospitality, the prawn sandwiches. An awful lot of people you see in the crowd are from abroad, you know, from Asia and places like that. Whereas Liverpool isn't a kind of that at all. You get a real sense it's a real community, and prawn sandwiches wouldn't taste the same.
Yeah, I wouldn't go as far as the prawn sandwiches at Anfield, but you are seeing in football in England in general now. If you go, there's a smattering of everything.
Yeah,
from Scandinavian to Chinese to Japanese to all over the world.
Even at Liverpool.
Yeah,
because Liverpool's a huge brand.
That's what they are now, aren't they? Football clubs are a brand, and they want to get people coming from China, and because they spend money, they want to get people coming from India. God helps the first team they get an Indian footballer, they're going to really, really rake it in.
Now, to go back to Jack, Italian 90, because I was on
I thought you'd forgot about it.
Well, I haven't forgot about it because I think it's one of the greatest. I want to get to the bottom of it first.
Yeah,
because
I'll try.
I got to the end of it. I got the plane home before the team was coming on, and your mum and dad were on the plane, and I'd been advocating, agitating for your selection.
Yes,
on the basis that you were by far the best player we had. Now, so you went. And you had a bit of an injury at the start.
I broke my foot.
Right.
I broke my foot at Arsenal, and which Liverpool had not diagnosed very, very quickly because there was nothing showing up on x-rays. And then I had to go for a bone scan in the end, and I had a fracture in the inside of my foot, along with three healing fractures in my toes as well, which we didn't think about then.
Yes.
We played with them.
Yeah.
But I was putting plaster then. Come through it, and then was okay when I went.
Right.
To
you're fit.
Yes, but we were doing shooting one day, and I'd done my thigh when we were out there in the warm up. And then I can't remember where we were, but they had no ice, so they decided, and I'm sure it was Mick. I put Mick in it. They got me some dry ice from somewhere.
Yeah.
And they put the dry ice in a towel and put it on my thigh. And they left it on for like 15, 20 minutes. When we tried to take it off, it was stuck to my thigh.
Yeah.
And I'm having to use hot water to get this block of ice off my leg.
Right.
And then I come up in big blisters. It was funny, actually. We were training then the AOL and the blisters burst and thing. But I was feeling okay.
Yeah.
Now, I said after the Egypt... Was it the Egypt game or what was the first game?
The first game.
Second game was Egypt.
Yeah.
First game was
England, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Wasn't it?
It was, wasn't it? Italian 90. Sheeds.
Yeah.
Sheeds scored, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So I was declared
Egypt
not fit for that
is the
game.
Second game.
Yeah. And then I said I was fit. And Jack said. Now, Jack picked the team and the subs. And I wasn't involved. And I booted the ball over the top of the stand.
This is mainly, before the Egypt game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mainly to say that my thigh's all right.
Yeah.
Look, I've just booted that ball over there.
Yeah.
And Jack said, who's kicked that there? And I said, I did. And he went, I'll just go and train. But then I said, I've got my stubborn kid head on then. And I went, well
you were right.
Well, I said, if I'm not fit, I'm not training.
Yeah.
How can I be not fit and train?
How had your relationship been with Jack in general?
Oh, the only falling outs we ever had was about football.
Yeah,
why
of course.
Don't play
yeah,
me.
yeah, No,
but that was it. I got on all right with Jack, but yeah. come football terms, when he wouldn't play me, I wasn't happy, and I wasn't going to be his best friend. There was a lot of people closer to him than me.
Yeah.
But I'd say hello, I'd be civil all the time, and good morning, and have a laugh.
Could it be that you were a genuinely great player, playing for a genuinely great club, and maybe that Jack was a bit of a bully? I mean, he had nice characteristics.
It could be a bully, you know, most definitely.
And that just, he may have liked to dig you out now and again.
Well, was he doing that with Liam? Was he doing that with Dave O'Leary?
He did it with Liam.
Well, was it the same thing that he was trying to do?
Well,
if I can leave him out, I can leave any of his out.
Yeah, that's what he did with Liam, you know, in Lanzarote against Germany. I mean,
he took him off.
He took him off after Germany scored straight away. Mm-hmm. And he told John afterwards, he said, I had to do it, John. I wanted to...
Something
I wanted
different.
To show the people that he wasn't able to do it anymore, because the implication was, if you're taken off after you conceded a goal, that you were the person responsible. So John said, you know, how could you do that? And that's what he was like, you know. Mm-hmm. So anyway, you didn't play against Egypt, and we all know what happened. I threw me a pen, but it was because we were so awful. I mean, what was it like? Sit there, watch that.
When you're not, you know, you're not involved, and you're looking at it, and you're thinking, this is, surely I can do a little.
So it must have been a bad experience. The whole,
I didn't enjoy it. No,
no, but a bad experience.
Terrible experience, you know, of getting to a World Cup. You've always wanted to do it.
And I was at the Holland match again, you know.
I came on a sub, didn't I? I got 15, 20 minutes.
But the game was over then, wasn't it? Because both sides knew a draw.
Two teams were talking to each other. But it was funny, the Dutch lads were going, you have to pass it. Don't keep just giving it back to the goalkeeper and kicking it. Pass it, make it look like, because we're both through if it's a draw.
And now you're through to Romania, penalty shootout. And you're out of it. That's a terrible feeling.
That was a horrible feeling, And you're trying to cheer.
And you're fit.
And I'm fit. I feel I'm fit. I tell you what happened. Before we played the Dutch, Jack was thinking about going three at the back.
Yeah.
So he played three centre-backs, and he played the team with three centre-backs, and then the subs, like myself, who was supposed to be unfit, we played against him. Kingard even played right back for us against the first team.
Yeah.
And I was playing centre midfield, and I felt really, really good. And I'm trying to give out orders to people. I said, just keep putting her in the corner. Let's go do to them.
Yeah.
They couldn't handle it.
Right.
And Jack stopped after 15 minutes. Went, no, that's not right. We're not doing this. But I felt now I've got a chance.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I looked fit, and I was getting around the pitch, and I was doing everything, and I wasn't happening. I wasn't getting in.
And we got to the quarterfinal against Italy, and again,
I mean, I love John Sherrin, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But I cannot say that Shares was ever a greater player than me.
Ah, no, that's ridiculous.
Now, I felt this was the only time where Jack got to me, as I want to get to you with this one.
Right.
It's probably wrong to say it, but it was what I felt. Because he put Shares on with 15, 20 minutes to go and left me sitting there still.
No, I know. It was horrendous.
That decision I couldn't understand.
No,
I talked to Cass, and he was saying that him and Andy Townsend were saying at some stage that if we're not going well and it's not going with us, one of us say we're injured and try and get Ronnie on.
Yeah,
but
so
it was never going to happen if Jack didn't want to put me on.
You're not someone to put yourself about or to be boastful or anything like that. But it was driving me crazy, because we needed quality on the pitch.
By all accounts, somebody said that was on the bench when I went on against Holland, after a couple of minutes Jack went, I told you he's not fit, look at him.
Yeah, but I mean, we are in the quarterfinal of the World Cup, and we're
still a chance.
Yeah, we have a player who can play, we have a player who can score goals, we have a player who's just playing for one of the best teams in England, who's done it in Wembley, you know, cup final, just been a great, great player, and he's sitting on the bench.
I'd love to know his reason, but we will never know the reason.
No.
But I would love to know what his point was. But I do feel that that point was, well, you know, you've been a pain, so.
Yeah, it was a bad experience in your career.
That was the worst experience in my career.
Yeah. Just to go back to your career down at Liverpool, I mean, how long did it go after 1990?
I was still there 4 years. I was still there, but never did Suey come in then, didn't he?
As soon as I had been a colleague,
yeah,
of all you guys,
yeah,
and he came in with the big stick, did he?
Yeah, I don't know why Suey wanted to do it that way, because I used to get on, I still get on, get on great with Suey still,
yeah,
but when he's a manager and you're a player, and he started to do some weird things
and heavy training and stuff
that was
like
pre-season
that
started. Yeah. Ronnie Moran and Roy Evans were doing their old Liverpool pre-season. Yeah, yeah. Suey and Phil Boersma wanted to add a bit more. And then we had five or six Achilles injuries.
Right.
Because it was just a big overload pre-season. But I don't know what happened with Suey. I thought he would have come back in, brought players in. Some of the players he brought in, you have an image of Suey as a hard man, tough on the pitch, he was, but he was a magnificent footballer.
Oh, he was, yeah.
But he brought in likes of Ruddock and Paul Stewart and Julian Dix, supposedly hard men, but not in a way that Suey was hard.
Yeah.
And they weren't up to a calibre of what Liverpool had had over the years. And I think that's why Liverpool have failed for so long, is that the calibre of player has gone down a notch to what it used to be in them.
Yeah,
80s.
And just to just look at, finally, at the game, you know, as it is today, because you're still one of the best analysts and of it, and the even though you don't like you don't agree with me about Wes Hoolahan and the horrible article you wrote in the Evening Herald.
Forget,
you can get full of this. You can get this in the Evening Herald. But everyone is entitled to one blind spot. I just want to ask you about Klopp, Pep Guardiola in particular, and this whole idea now, because you did play with some of the greatest defenders in the history of the game, really. And this idea that, you know, defenders aren't important, and that you can keep a team at bay by keeping the ball, don't give them the ball, deny them the ball, the way Barcelona used to do, the great Barcelona team, and then you don't need defenders. That's essentially what Pep appears to be saying. Klopp is a different thing. You'll defend higher up the field. Would you agree with me that just you need great defenders? Liverpool couldn't have won the things they won when you were there and before you were there without the great defenders, the Hansons, the Laurensons. And
I go back to 79 with Phil Thompson and them. I think they conceded 14 goals in a season.
Yeah. And Man United, when they won the Premier League a few years ago, I think the second last time they won it, 14 goals. In
Arsenal?
Arsenal, yeah, same.
1-0 to the Arsenal.
So this is one of the big things that's in vogue now. And I know you've watched it. You were in Monaco last week. I had to see Manchester City in Monaco. Just in your view, you have to have a balance in the team.
Most definitely. Yes, you should go forward, and it's great to see all the lovely football, but yes, you've got to be able to defend. I don't think they teach them anymore. I don't think they teach them one-on-one. You know, you always should take them away from the goal. They're showing them inside onto the right foot.
Classically, that goal, Falcao got the chip.
Yeah. I don't know what they teach. You know, you'd love to go into a club and go, when do you do defending? We're not bothered because they'll score four. But they're not always going to score four. Mm. And then I go on to Mourinho the other day, where he had six at the back. It's a completely different thing when they were... who did they play? I don't know. But he had four centre-backs and two full-backs.
Yeah.
Now, that's going beyond.
Yeah.
But he was defending the lead.
Yeah.
So you can let him away with it a little bit.
But one thing about Mourinho, Mourinho's teams don't give up cheap goals.
Well, that's different
And you shouldn't.
No, I don't think you're ever going to be really... If you keep giving goals away, I don't think you can be... Except if you're Barcelona, obviously, but you can't be really that successful if you keep giving goals away all the time. You cannot guarantee a centre-forward is going to score a goal.
A final question, Ronnie, because I know a lot of Liverpool fans, like I am, listening, because you don't give a lot of interviews to keep your head down. You're not a media tark like me. I love him. I love the way he started out, but I'm beginning to question if he's going to buy defenders, if he knows what a good defender is, or indeed if he can find one out there.
That's the whole thing, isn't it? If you know what they are, and Matip hasn't been too bad. Lovren at times has been good, but too often they make stupid mistakes.
Yeah,
the goalkeepers haven't been great.
No.
I think it's a big period for him in the summer.
He's improved a lot of the forward players.
Oh, you look at Lallana. Lallana's come up in leaps and bounds. Firmino's very good. We we hadn't seen him a lot before then, but we'd seen a lot of Lallana. We know Lallana. Manny's been very
Manny's
good.
Manny's great, yeah.
But
goodbye.
This is a big summer for him.
Yeah.
He needs a left back, definitely. He can't keep playing Milner there.
No, no.
He needs another centre back, if not two, and he needs a top class striker.
Right. 20 goals a year, man. Yep.
Well, if it's been.
Yeah.
It's they're difficult to find. They're expensive.
They're scoring
but
a lot of goals.
It.
It's not as if they're not scoring goals. And they scored more goals in the Premier League, I think, than anyone else this year.
Yeah, but again, defensively, we go back to it.
And that's going to be the test for him.
This is the big test, because if it goes the same way half this time next year, if we're still conceding goals, you have to start asking questions of what's really going on. Yeah, it looks great going forward, but we're never going to win anything if you keep conceding goals.
Okay, Ronnie, it's been absolute joy to talk to you. Thank you very much for doing this, and I forgive you for Wes.
Wes is not playing tonight.
That's the great Ronnie Wheeler.
Thanks, cheers, Ronnie. Eamon, thank you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.